This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, sitting in for Terry Gross. The fact that John Daly is a pro golfer who's won two of the tour's four major tournaments may be among the least interesting things about him. As Daly says in his memoir, he's won tournaments on five continents, downed enough booze to get into emergency rooms and rehab clinics, beat up hotel rooms, houses, and cars, gambled away a couple of fortunes, married four times, and now lives on Diet Coke and Marlboro Lights. I guess you could say, Daly writes, I'm not exactly a poster boy for moderation. Daly's behavior has earned him fines and suspensions from the PGA, but he is adored by fans, in part because he's a plain-spoken Arkansas boy who doesn't try to cover up his flaws, but also because people love to watch him hit a ball. He's a huge bear of a man, blessed with the flexibility of a fencer, and when he turns his shoulder into a swing and releases his power into a golf ball, it travels eye-popping distances. I spoke to John Daly about his memoir, called My Life In and Out of the Rough, and his new instructional book, Golf My Own Damn Way. You know, a batter has a half a second to decide whether to swing at a ball, and a shortstop has to react quickly. A football moves quickly, so does basketball, but in a golf tournament, you play 4 days, and if you're ahead on that last day, you have lots and lots of time to think about how you're going to screw up a shot. I mean, the mental side of this game is such a huge part of it.
Oh, there's no doubt. You know, you mentally, you know, if you're confident mentally, it's a great game, and you can make a great living. You know, I've had a bad spurt the last year and a half. I hadn't played very good, but I really just haven't had the confidence. You know, and I've had a couple decent rounds, you know, a few decent rounds this year. I just hadn't put four together. But the mental part of it, the physical part of it, it's all, if you don't have both of those, you know, it's a very, very tough game to play.
Well, the interesting thing is that you're a guy who's known for not spending a lot of time over a shot. The motto is grip it and rip it, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
When did you develop that approach?
Since when I picked up my first club, probably when I was 4 years old. When I started playing the game, I watched Nicklaus, and I fell in love with the game because of him, but I loved the way Fuzzy Zeller and Lee Trevino, they were quick, and Chichi, they were very quick when they played. They didn't think about it too much.
And that's Chichi Rodriguez, the old golfer with a funny hat, right?
Yeah, Chichi, he was beautiful. And, you know, Trevino, everybody kind of knows Trevino, but, you know, the legends of the game. I mean, I love Nicklaus, how he won majors and how he won golf tournaments, but there's no way I could have played. He was very, very meticulous, very slow, you know. I couldn't play golf that way.
And what happens if you try and do it deliberately, take more time and analyze a shot?
Oh, it could go anywhere. It's just, you know, you just get used to what you feel and what you see in any sport. You know, you take a basketball player at free throw line, some take, you know, 20 seconds to shoot it, and some take one. It just depends on the feel and the rhythm that you have.
Well, you burst into prominence in 1991 when you were an unknown guy on the PGA Tour and won the PGA, one of the four big tournaments of the year. And it's a terrific story, and it begins with how you got in. I mean, you know, typically people on the tour for these big majors will spend a week or so playing at the course ahead of time. There are practice rounds the days leading up to the tournament. What did you do in the days leading up to that tournament in 1991?
Well, I was practicing at home Monday and Tuesday, and I was ninth alternate going into Wednesday morning, and I think I was still ninth alternate. And
meaning you were not even invited to play. You were the ninth.
No.
You were the ninth substitute if eight guys bailed.
Right, right. Actually, it was Tuesday, and then Wednesday I went down to like four, and then I got a call about 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock that evening. I was down to two, so I said, you know, I'll just drive up there. I got to do an event with Fuzzy close by there anyway. I'll go up and watch him play. And when I got into my hotel room, they said, you've got Nick Price's tee time at 12:20 or something like that on Thursday. So I never saw the golf course, didn't have a practice round. You know, I had a really, really good caddy. The thing was, Nick Price said, could you please use Squeaky? My caddy, he's up there, and, you know, Nick's, they had a baby that week. So I said, yeah, I'll use Squeaky. And he had walked the golf course, and, you know, Squeaky, our motto was, he just said, kill it, John. And that's what we did that week. Every shot, we just killed it.
The caddy, of course, is the golfer's guide to every little nook and cranny, getting all the distances right. What happened on the first day? How'd you do?
I played pretty good. I think I shot 3 under par. And then the second day, I think I shot 4 under or 5 under. And next thing you know, I was in the lead. And nobody really, it wasn't really that big of a deal to the fans. I mean, the fans were, it was a big deal to them. But the media was kind of like, who is this guy? You know, blah, blah, blah. He'll choke. You know, he. And then when I had the lead after Saturday and went to the Colt game, you know, there were 65,000 people that applauded me when I walked into the stadium, and I said, wow, this is really cool.
That was the Indianapolis Colts game where the owner invited you. But yeah, another interesting thing about that tournament, which a lot of people didn't know for a while, and that involved the rainstorm that hit the course on, I guess it was day one, right? What happened?
Yeah, it was Thursday afternoon. We actually had to go in for a little bit, for about a 45 to an hour and a half break, because the weather was so bad, and a man that got struck by lightning with 2 daughters and a wife. And, you know, when I won the tournament, I donated $30,000 to that family. And both daughters graduated from college. There's enough left over for one of their, another child, if they have a child, enough left over for them to go to school and college, too. So
these girls lost their dad in this lightning strike that day. Did they even know that you had made this contribution when they were growing up?
Not at that age, no. And the mother invested the money so well, and she had some good people behind her investing it. And, you know, it's amazing where that $30,000 went to.
Let's talk a little bit about your life. You know, I a lot of people think of professional golfers as people who grew up on country clubs. What did your parents do?
My dad was in nuclear power plants. He was on the construction side of building, they call units. And he had started with Bechtel, and it turned into Stone and Webster, and we moved around an awful lot. I went to 4 different high schools growing up, so it wasn't a lot of fun, because you get to know somebody, you know, and then you got to leave. But it's kind of the way my career is, you know. You go from town to town to town to town, and you just meet all these beautiful fans and stuff. So it kind of helped me grow up a little quicker. But that's about it. Mom, she was just one of the greatest human beings in my life, and I lost her about 5 years ago, but she was always with us and home and stuff. So, you know, but you talk about people growing up on country clubs, and I was kind of grew up on, you know, a 9-hole golf course in Darnell, Arkansas. It was a country club, but let's put it this way, it's only $95 a month, and I own it now, and the members pay $95 a month. So you can almost say it's public. So I redid the clubhouse and redid the greens and bought all new equipment and did a new maintenance shed, so I've got it fixed up pretty good. Now I just need some more members.
Right. But you own this place that you played on when you were a kid. Yeah.
Yeah, when I was 9 years old, I told all the members that I was going to own it one day, and I bought it a couple years ago, so it's kind of special to me.
Now, you write in this book that when you were a teenager, there were times when your dad would be away on construction jobs, I guess, including in Pennsylvania, and there came a time when your mom would travel with him, and that you say you and your brother Jamie kind of raised yourselves and got in the habit of having drinking parties at the house, which grew from a few dozen to sometimes a couple of hundred, and got kind of wild. But I guess what I'm getting at is, I mean, clearly alcohol has been an issue in your life. I mean, you write in this that most people would be drunk for a month on what you had before dinner in a few years after this. I'm just wondering if maybe you developed a habit then that was not helpful to you.
No, probably not. I mean, I abused alcohol. I think a lot of us can say we have. But, you know, I think it in time, if you catch it quick enough, you know, social drinking is one thing, but just getting drunk because of a good round of golf or a bad round of golf like I did in college and my first few years as a pro, drinking was, you know, I took it to heart. You know, if I played really bad, I'd drink, you know, drink and just kind of just say the heck with it. And then if I played really good, I'd still drink. So, but usually when I get on the road now on tour, I don't even have any beers. I just relax and sit in the bus and drink Diet Cokes. And that's a big change. And I think it's an age, you know, once mm-hmm. you grow up a little bit more, those hangovers aren't as easy as, you know, to play golf on as they used to be. I used to be able to win golf tournaments on it. Now I don't want to get out of bed. So.
One of your trademarks is walking the golf course with a Marlboro Light in your mouth. And you tell a fascinating story in this book about how you started smoking. You were not a smoker in high school, right?
No, I didn't smoke first cigarette until I was 19. I was in college, and Coach Lloyd says, if you, you know, you don't lose 70 pounds, you're not playing for this team. He says, here, have a Marlboro Light. And I started smoking, and, you know, that's one thing I wish I never would have done. But I kept the weight off and, you know, gradually got into Marlboro mediums, and, you know, I'm smoking two packs a day. But it's the hardest thing to get off. I'll tell you, I haven't really ever thought about quitting, but I don't even know if I could.
But it was your college coach who suggested this as a weight loss tool?
Yeah, he says, do whatever you got to do. So I went into heavy Jack Daniels, drinking, you know, tons of that and eating dry popcorn and smoking cigarettes. That's the only way I thought I could keep my weight off. You know, I lost 70 pounds in 3 months. He basically starved me. He weighed me every 3 days in the Broyles Complex. If I was a pound over what he thought I should be, I wasn't going to get to travel or play, whether I won qualifying or not. He was very, very, he was ruthless is what he was. He was just brutal.
You did stop drinking hard stuff, but then you write that you found two other addictions, chocolate and gambling, which you still addicted to chocolate?
Yeah, I mean, I don't eat as much as I used to, but and I still gamble a little bit, but not, you know, the middle 90s is when all that was taking place more than anything.
Yeah.
Because I was sober for 5 years, and I was the most miserable human being in the world, and I started drinking just before the British Open in 95, and not just, you know, boozing it up crazy. I just started drinking beer again, and I felt comfortable doing it. I felt like, wow, what a relief, you know. And everybody says, oh, you're in denial. So I'm not in denial. What am I in denial for? Yeah. I mean, I want to have a few beers. It's not a crime. It's not illegal. And next thing you know, I win the British Open because I was relaxed, and I had about 4 or 5 beers a night, you know, at the British just to, you know, I don't know, it made me feel good.
Well, you know, and I think for folks who don't know the game well, I mean, winning the British Open is not something you just dismiss in a phrase. It is one of the four really prestigious tournaments in a year, and this was at St. Andrews, which is, you know, the home of golf's oldest and most revered traditions. I mean, that was a really special time for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a great win. It's, you know, Nicklaus said it. He said, if you ever win at St. Andrews, the British Open there, your career's complete. So it's great to have that on the resume.
A lot of golfers, especially nowadays, have very rigorous training regimens and diets and really work hard at muscle development and staying in shape. You don't, right? Never have,
God
really.
Bless them. God bless them. Let them go puke and all that stuff and run and work out. This ain't football. You know, if I walk 7 miles a day, what more do I need to do?
You've got to repeat this exchange you had with Tiger Woods about that. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, at the his tournament in Target. It was funny. I said, Tiger, why don't you come have a beer with us? And he says, nah, I got to go work out, man. If I had your talent, I'd be drinking a beer too.
That's a pretty good line. But, you know, it's interesting because golf is a game that you can play until you're old as an amateur, and now there's this tour for players over 50, the Champions Tour, in which, you know, gets television coverage and big crowds and a lot of money. And I wonder, you know, I remember Mickey Mantle once saying he wished he'd taken better care of himself and thought he could have played longer. Are you concerned that a lack of conditioning might limit your ability to play in future years?
Well, I think whether you work out or you're fit or whatever, injuries as you get older, you're going to get aches and pains. It doesn't matter if you're the strongest man in the world. And I don't think staying working out and stuff is going to stop anybody from doing that. I think the medicine that we have out there today that can stop arthritis and stop, you know, bones from aching and stuff is going to be a key probably in my life when I get older. But I don't think working out is going to be something that I need to really worry about. I think the best exercise is walking anyway. I think it keeps your heart at a nice pace rate. I don't like getting my heart all racing and stuff. I think it causes a lot of problems, but I'm not a doctor. If that's my excuse for not working out, I'm sticking to it. but anyway, I mean, I don't believe in having to work out to play the game of golf. I just don't. If people enjoy working out, God bless them. If people enjoy running, God bless them. I enjoy smoking a cigarette, drinking a Diet Coke when I get up in the morning, and going to the first tee. And, you know, I believe nicotine and caffeine equal protein. That's my line.
Well, it's worked for you so far. Although you've had some nagging injuries over the past year, right? Do you expect you're going to kind of get them in shape and get back to winning on the tour again?
Yeah, this time off, I hopefully will help my shoulder. The ribs been pretty good. Doc only had to pop it in two times, but my shoulders had been popped in 5 times. And yeah, it was a rough incident. We were at Honda on the 12th hole, which I played the back nine. It was my first nine. So usually on Thursday and Fridays, if the people don't know, we play early, late, or late, early, and we go on the front nine or back nine, whichever day, the first day or second day. But I was on the 12th tee box, my third hole that morning, and a lady with a camera just came out of her house. There was no security walls inside this complex or this golf course. People were just walking out of their houses, taking pictures, which is totally against all our bylaws and stuff of the tour. The tour really messed up on this one. And she had a flash camera, and I backed away from my shot twice. They didn't confiscate the camera, which they're supposed to do. And she got me when I was right ready to come down. She flashed again. I closed my eyes, and I stopped, and my shoulder, just you could hear it crack. And my rib went dead left into my back. And within 30 minutes when I got into the physiotherapy trailer, the rib had swelled up to almost, there's like a golf ball size that they had to massage out, but and the shoulder was separated. They couldn't get it back in. They couldn't get the rib back in, so I got to put a brace on, drive my bus from Honda all the way to Fayetteville, Arkansas, because I only trust Doc Whitelaw, and I got there, and sure enough, he popped it back in, and he got the rib back in. That was what was really painful.
Huh. Did you ever meet the lady?
No. There was a police report and everything, but the thing is, it really hurt me this year because I had to withdraw from nine or ten tournaments because of the shoulder and three because of the ribs. So, you know, that's tough.
Yeah.
It hurts the sponsors. I'm probably going to lose pretty much all my sponsors. I hope not, but I've played really bad. And I can't blame them, but it's just been one of those years where the injuries really, that injury really, really hurt my career.
And so what happens there is that you've cranked your body around, you're at the top of the backswing, and then trying to stop with all that momentum is what injured you.
Yeah. I've never how long I've been a tour, 18 years, I've never, ever had to stop on my downswing. It's almost humanly impossible, but I just flinched. The flash, it wasn't like it was a bright, sunny day. There's some kind of cloud covering, and you know, a flash like that, you can't help but flinch.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and people who know your swing, it comes down with the force of a locomotive. I mean,
135 miles an hour trying to stop that's you know,
right.
That wasn't easy to do.
You know, you sound like somebody who tries not to be too hard on yourself. I mean, you can sort of accept what life gives you. And, you know, one of the toughest things in playing a round of golf is accepting a bad shot and forgetting about it and moving on. I mean, do you think you're kind of built in a way to play this game?
Well, I think more of my mentality. And, you know, growing up, I used to just get really, really mad. And now I just accept that, hey, I got to move on. And I've learned to deal with bad shots. I've learned to deal with very strong curves and horseshoe bends in my life. But, you know, I think I'm a lot more mature than I used to be. Of course, we all grow up, and things don't bother us as much. You know, it's like just a simple thing, like if the bed isn't made. I used to just have to make the bed up every morning. I'm a neat freak. And every morning, even if it's a hotel or my bus or my home, I got to make the bed up. And now I just say, well, you know, maybe I'll get to it later. And that's kind of the way I live right now. I'm not in no hurry to really get a lot of stuff done. I'm just kind of slowing down. And I wish when I was 25 I could have been like this. Huh. You know, I think maybe if I wouldn't have got so uptight and got so emotionally mad at myself for hitting a bad shot, you know, Tiger does get mad, but he rebounds quickly. I didn't. It would be one or two holes back when I was younger that I would screw up even more because I wasn't forgetting about that hole before. And now I just kind of go on with life like, hey, whatever, throw something at me, I'll get through it. I'm used to it.
When did you become a neat freak? That's interesting.
Ever since I was eight years old, my mom never had to vacuum my room, make up my bed. or fold any clothes. I wasn't very good with the laundry. She taught me how to iron. She taught me the laundry and stuff. It took me a while to get the washer and the dryer. I used to just stuff everything in there and then throw it in the dryer, thinking it wouldn't do anything. But, you know, my red shirt became pink. My brown shorts became red. I mean, you know, but I learned quickly. But, no, I just felt like if I have everything in place, organized, I'll know where everything is. And like my bus, I like for the candles to be lit and smell good. And I like for it to be clean. I don't, you know, it's just the way I've always been ever since a kid. And my wife enjoys that. she never really has to make up the bed. And, you know, the only thing I really don't, she gets mad at me because I like to clean the dishes. I don't believe in dishwashers. I think I can clean the dishes better than the dishwasher can.
Well, John Daly, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
Pro golfer John Daly. His memoir is My Life in and Out of the Rough. His new book is Golf My Own Damn Way. I'm Dave Davies, and this is Fresh Air.